We left off at 24, verse 22, and we saw the integrity of David as he spared the life of Saul at En Gedi, right? So that's where we kind of left off. And then, it says, then Samuel died in verse 1, and the Israelites gathered together and lamented for him and buried him at his home in Ramah. And David arose and went down to the wilderness of Paran. So interesting, David experiences the death of Samuel, somebody that he's entrusted, really was the one that told him that he was going to be king and anointed him as the Lord would request him to do, and he would be the one that David, during his turmoil with Saul, would run to. And now Samuel's dead, and sometimes that can throw us for a loop. And I think even in this chapter, you kind of see a different side of David, not the David that had ran from Saul, but the David now that becomes frustrated with a man and even determines within his heart to take care of him and his servants. And so here we have Samuel that dies, and you know, we could say that Samuel was probably one of the greatest men that was in the Bible, somebody that we can certainly look toward, but even then, a guy that is thought of as being holy, being separate for God, still is subject to death, right? So it tells us something about Samuel too. He wasn't, even though he looks somewhat perfect in Scripture, he's still subject to death. And when you're subject to death, well, that's a penalty of sin. So, you know, he still had the curse from Adam, you know. So, but he had a heritage, you know, and if you look at Samuel's life in 1 Chronicles 9, verse 22, it suggests that he organized the Levites in the service of the sanctuary. In that same book, 1 Chronicles 26, 27 through 28, Samuel begins to collect treasures to build the temple that was built in Solomon's day. In 2 Chronicles chapter 35, verse 18, we see reports that Samuel remembers the Passover, right? That feast that the Jews would remember. And really, we remember, right? As he brought Israel out of Egypt, out of slavery, that whole remembrance of God. And remember, there was a time in Israel's rebellion that they didn't perform the Passover, and they were subjected to 70 years in captivity, right? So it was an important thing. In Jeremiah 15 verse 1, we're told that Samuel was a great intercessor, so he prayed, right, to the Lord. And of course, if we look in Hebrews 11:33, he's mentioned there, the hall of faith, right? The guys that we see there are Abraham and so forth, but there is Samuel in verse 33 there. So a great man, but you know, God is not done when a great man dies. Right, I think of Billy Graham, right, as he went home to be with the Lord. He certainly was a man of our time that we looked up to, that we looked toward as being a guy that upheld the word of the Lord. No matter the situation, whether behind the Iron Curtain, you know, just remember him preaching in Russia behind the Iron Curtain, and communists was there, and communism was there, and so forth, and he just stayed true to it, didn't he? And so there are the men, but once they're gone, the evangelists like Billy Graham, you know, and of course his son is kind of taking the reins, but it shouldn't, we should look upon it as, you know, okay, now we got to pick up the slack, you know, in a sense. You know, God, there's a lot of great things we can remember about Billy, but the bottom line is God doesn't tell us to look back always, does he? He wants us to look forward to what he's going to do and look forward to what our part in that is. So Samuel was a great man of his time and affected both Saul and Samuel's and David's life. Verse 2. Now there was a man in Maon whose business was in Carmel. And the man was very rich. He had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats. I guess the more sheep, the more goats you have, the richer you are, right, in those days. We would equate it with millions, right? Well, the guy is a millionaire. Well, this was what he was looked upon. And he was shearing his sheep in Carmel. That shearing meant that it was a time for money, right? It's like the harvest. When somebody said that they were in the harvest, it meant that they were reaping crops in order to further economics, for their economy, right, to support their family. The name of the man was Nabal, and the name of his wife was Abigail. And she was a woman of good standing and a beautiful appearance. I find this interesting that they would talk about her character prior to his. I guess good before, you know, when somebody asks you, what do you want, the good or the bad news, right? We always take the good news first, right? So that was the good news. The bad news is the man was harsh and evil in his doing. He was of the house of Caleb. So he was a rich man, but he was a poor man, if you could imagine. He was the man that was harsh, and it says that he was evil. He didn't even do good, it would seem. He was probably the Scrooge of the day, right? Always kind of bitter, and his disposition wasn't really correct. But it was a time of the sheep shearing, so it was the time of feasts. They would have feasts during that time. Why? Because they could afford it, right? It was a celebration of the goodness of the Lord, what the feast should have been. It was a time for people to be hospitable, to bring people together, and to give and to be generous. And this man, Nabal, his name, which is interesting, is equated to fool. Fool. So whether he was given this at birth and he fulfilled the prophetic message of his name, we don't know, right? But I would almost think that he earned it. He earned this name, Nabal, because he was a fool. And it says that he was of the house of Caleb, which is interesting too, is because Caleb actually equates to dog. Dog. And so it's more of a description of his disposition as anything. That he had kind of this disposition of a, you know, just a harsh, evil kind of dog. You know, just kind of nasty. On the other hand, his wife had a beautiful appearance, it says, and we only see that described, that description in other women's life as Rachel in Genesis 29 and also Esther in chapter 2 of Esther. So interesting, huh? And then David heard in verse 4, heard in the wilderness that Nabal was shearing his sheep. David sent 10 men, and David said to the young men, go up to Carmel, go to Nabal, and greet him by in my name. And thus you shall say to him who lives in prosperity, peace be to you, peace to your house, and peace to all that you have. Now I have heard that you have shears, your shepherds were with us. We did not hurt them, nor was there anything missing from them all while they were in Carmel. Ask your young men, and they will tell you. Therefore, let my young men find favor in your eyes, for we come on a feast day. Please give whatever comes to your hand to your servants and to your son David. So when David's young men came, they spoke to Nabal according to all these words in the name of David and waited. So David here expected some compensation. They had guarded the sheaves. They had done a good job. It was shearing time. He had made sure that Nabal's flocks was spared any raids from the Philistines, and he had just protected them. And it would seem fair, right, that David would go there, and his men would go there. And there was an expectant payout, in a sense, at the shearing. It was something that was common, right? David wasn't lording over them. He was helping them. And it goes to say, if somebody helps you and does a good job for you throughout, whether you have the money to pay him then or whenever, you should make good on that. And David's approach here was, young men, I want you to go to him honoring this man. I want you to honor him. He's prosperous. And go to him in peace. You know? Wasn't gonna, hey, you owe us, man, pay up. They weren't the bill collectors, you know. But just to go in peace and say, hey, you know, here we are. We protected you. And matter of fact, you can go to others which are in your servanthood, and you can ask them. You can ask them how we helped them, and they'll testify for us that, hey, that they helped us well. That there was others around. Don't take just our word for it, but you can go to them. David didn't suggest an amount. He didn't demand an amount. He was asking for that he would just. And it says, "Please give whatever comes to your hand," meaning whatever you delight to give. Be a cheerful giver and give, right? Maybe that's where Paul stuck on my head, my mind there. That he said that, right? To be a cheerful giver when we give. Whatever's in your hand, whatever the Lord allows in your hand to give, give that. And that's what David was asking for. Verse 10, and then Nabal answered David's servants and said, "Who is David and who is the son of Jesse? There are many servants nowadays who break away each one from their master. Shall I then take my bread and my water and my meat and that I have killed for my shearers and give it to men when I do not know where they are from?" So David's young men turned away on their heels and went back, and they came and told him all these words. So, it wasn't that Nabal didn't know David, because David was famous. He was famous throughout the land, right? It wasn't that. He almost here insults him or belittles the request from David in a disrespectful way, because he says something very similar to what Saul said. Saul would say, refer to David as son of Jesse. And what he meant by that, oh, you mean that little man out in the field, guarding the sheep? Just that little guy? That's who he is. You know, he's nothing. You know, and that's kind of how he referred to him as. And in other words, what he was really saying was, who do you think you are asking me for money? Who do you really think you are? And so, he says something here that's interesting too. He accuses David of backing off, right? Or you know, shall I? Let's see if I can find that. There are many servants nowadays that break away each one from his master. What was he talking about? He was making an accusation against David that David somehow broke away from Saul. And he really didn't, did he? He ran from him, of course, because Saul wanted to kill him. But he never broke away. Matter of fact, David was probably the one that had the strongest commitment to Saul of anybody. Yet Saul wanted to kill him. So Nabal here considered not that this stuff, the bread, the water, the meat, he didn't consider any of that the Lord's. And I think that's really where he may have just was so wrong. You know, at any time that we consider something ours, that we're in trouble, right? When we say, well, this is my water, you know, you can't drink out of my water, you know, and so forth. When we forget that, really, whose water is it? It's the Lord's, right? So anything that's ours in this world, we can say right now that it's the Lord's, you know, and that makes it a lot easier to be generous. Because, you know, I have no problem giving Mariah's money away. How much you got right now? Right? I have no problems giving her money away if I say, hey, you know, it's just, you know, it's Mariah's money. Well, if it's the Lord's money, and the Lord tells me to give it away, well, I have no problem giving it away. I'm generous. It's His money. He's blessed me with it. Verse 13, then David said to his men, every man gird on his sword. So every man girded on his sword, and David also girded on his sword. And about 400 men went with David, and 200 stayed with the supplies. Remember, he had 600 men. You think David is a little upset, you know, and this is what I mean, you know. I think David probably was hurting from the loss of Samuel, and I don't know. I'm just maybe surmising this, is that, you know, because before this he was solid as a rock. He was doing the right things, but then all of a sudden now he's getting angry and so forth. It might have been the circumstances of life, and we all get there, but we got to be careful even through them. We got to make sure we're in touch with the Lord, right? And, you know, this is exactly when the world doesn't treat us right, this is exactly what they want us to feel like, right? They want this kind of reaction, this mad at you thing, because that's the world. That's what the world does. And when you don't do that, that's what makes us holy. You know, holy just means separate, right? So we're supposed to be separate from the world. And, you know, Jesus said, whoever slaps you on the right cheek, turn to the other, to him also, right? Let him slap the other cheek. Now, that's difficult to do sometimes. But when you're walking in the Spirit of God, see, that's something that we do. We allow these things to pass. You know, somebody gets on our nerves, we just allow it to pass. And it never worked that way with anybody else but you. Why are you so different? Well, I'm holy. I'm set apart for the Lord. And remember, back, right? One chapter back there in En-Gedi, what did David do? David spared Saul's life, right? But here, this guy, that was the king. Now, we can all say, hey, we're willing to spare the king's life, but Nabal, come on. This guy's an evil man. He's harsh. He's not good to his wife. You know? Who knows what he's done further than what we know? And you expect me to be good to him? But Jesus said it was easier to love people that we naturally love, right? It's hard to love our enemies. It's hard to love those that are against us. You know, we gotta have a check in our spirit when we start treating people based upon their stature in the world. Well, he's the king. Well, he isn't. He's a rich man. He's below him. He's still pretty high up in society, but we want to treat him a little different. You know, God doesn't discriminate with us. We shouldn't with others, right? Verse 14, now one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, saying, "Look, David sent messengers from the wilderness to greet our master, and he reviled them. But the men were very good to us, and we were not hurt, nor did we miss anything, as long as we accompanied them when we were in the fields. They were a wall to us, both by night and day, all the time we were with them keeping the sheep. Now therefore, look and consider what you will do, for harm is determined against our master and against all his household, for he is such a scoundrel that one cannot speak to him." He's a scoundrel. I like that word. I think we all know scoundrels, right? So Abigail hears what this messenger has to say, how that her husband has treated those that are servants of David. The witness would say of the ordeal, he would say that he reviled them. It kind of gives you this because remember they were on their heels. Remember they said they were on their heels, so there was a reviling that was just ferocious, right? Whether it was with language or arms or what exactly it was, I don't know if we have that information, but we know it was pretty reviling. This servant said so. This was his language, you know. And then when he went on, he testified of them being, his testimony of David's men, how they protected and how they kept them, was just really good and righteous, you know. But now, see, now the servant comes, the witness there, and he says, "Look, this is a life and death situation, Abigail. You know, what are you going to do? It's your husband. You know, it's your husband." Now, she could have turned around and said, "Look, this was an arranged marriage, and I had, you know, yeah, by on paper, he's my husband, but, you know." So she says, "Hey, you know, I'm going to do something, right?" I mean, that's the next portion of this verse here. So, but he comes to her and he knows him well, right? A scoundrel. Matter of fact, in my footnotes it says son of Beel, the kind of the son of the devil. You know. Verse 18 said, "Then Abigail made haste and took 200 loaves of bread, 2 skins of wine, 5 sheep already dressed, 5 I think it's seas of roasted grain, 100 clusters of raisins, and 200 cakes of figs, and loaded them on a donkey." Poor donkey. It's a lot of stuff. But just think how she had that availability. You know, you can tell how rich Nabal is here, right? And she said to her servant, "Go on before me. See, I am coming after you." But she did not tell her husband, Nabal. Now, that might be to her detriment, right? She should... You know, I mean, Scripture tells us to submit to our husbands, so therefore, well, not me, but, you ladies, right? So, I mean, it's it's something that she should have done, but there's probably some practical reasons why she didn't do it, too. And maybe we'll talk about some of those. So it was as she rode on the donkey that she went down under cover of the hill. And there were David and his men coming down toward her, and she met them. So Abigail, remember the description of Abigail. Abigail was of good understanding. She knew what needed to be done. She was able to do what needed to be done. I know with my wife, if I tell her something needs to be done, it's done. Right? She knows what to get and what to grab and what to put out and all that stuff. Right, honey? She knows how to get it all together. And it's always good to have a wife like that with good understanding. And so she responded. She knew what to do. She took action. And it seemed like it was an important thing. She gathered quickly. She saw it as something that was pressing, right? She didn't stand around and think and sometimes neglect what she had to do, but she took action. Verse 21, now David had said, surely, who's surely anyways? Surely in vain I have protected all that this fellow has in the wilderness. So that morning was missed of all that belonged to him, and he has repaid me evil for good. May God do so and more also to the enemies of David. If I leave one male of all who belong to him by morning light. So David quite upset. He's wondering why he did what he did, right? Why did I even protect this guy? Why did I even protect his servants? Why did I protect his flocks? I should have just let the Philistines have them and take his sheep and all that stuff. And he says it was all in vain. Now you think about that. I don't think it was, because now what we're going to see is David's heart revealed to him through another person. You know, and sometimes these things happen, right? Anytime that, you know, it looks like we're doing good and it's for evil, or we're doing something for somebody and we think, why did I even do that for that person? You know, maybe it's for you. You know, maybe it's for me. You know, that this is happening is that God is somehow revealing my heart to me. You know, where I'm at. You know, we get all angry about things sometimes. And then David would, his intention here was to basically annihilate them, right? He was going to go down and take everything that Nabal, in a sense, owed him. He was going to take it out on his servants. And it says there, if I leave one male of all who belong to him by morning light, meaning that he shouldn't, you know. But as Christians, see, we're called to a higher ground. Right? Can we get angry? Certainly we can get angry. Can we? Scripture is pretty clear on it. We can get angry, but we need to do it without sinning. You know? It's got to be righteous anger, and that's hard. It's hard because our emotions kind of get stirred, and then all of a sudden we're not righteous anymore. We might be right about the situation, about how it's evil and all this stuff, but we're not right about the way we're taking action. You know, David was right about Nabal, right? He was right that this guy was evil. He was harsh. That he wasn't generous, right? He understood the facts about Nabal. But the problem, see, God did too. See, God was trying to show David his heart. Because it was important that his heart was worked out, because God was going to use David for mighty things. Right? So as Christians, we just need to take a higher ground. It's easy to get defensive and just go at people, but it's harder to sit back, hear what they have to say, and not respond. Right? But that's what Jesus did. Right? When Jesus was going to the cross, they asked him to stand up. They asked him to testify who he was, and he just sat still. Right? Because God does things through our silence sometimes. He does things through our lack of action sometimes. Sometimes is our lack of action is good. Right? Sometimes we have to walk away from the arguments. We have to pursue peace. Right? Kind of like what David's in the beginning, right? He went to Nabal and he was pursuing peace. Say peace unto them, peace unto your household. That's how we need to pursue people, right? Peacefully. Remember what I shared a couple weeks ago about a guy that would always confront me at Xerox, and I would always get defensive and stuff, and he would yell at me, and then I would pull out my yelling gun, and he would have a yelling gun, and we'd have this gunfight in a sense, right? That's the way does it accomplish anything? It doesn't, other than frustrate you. You go back to your desk, and your heart's doing this kind of thing, and you're wondering how successful is that, you know? But generally speaking, it isn't. Okay, we left off at 23. Now Abigail saw David. She dismounted quickly from the donkey, fell on her face before David, and bowed down to the ground. I think it shows us something here. Here is Abigail's appeal to David. Right. First of all, Abigail sees him. It's pretty likely that as she came over the hill and she saw the men, David didn't see her. She approached him because she saw him first, and she approached him. And behind her was just donkeys that are packed with goods, right? They just have all these goods. And David's standing there just going, wow, look at them donkeys. Right? Look at all that stuff on them donkeys. And her expression to David was, when she came to him, it says that she fell on her face before him. And she bowed to the ground. It was a sign of her humility. You know, it just showed her humility. When we look at Abigail here, we find a few things that she does really well when she's confronting David. And even before she confronted David, remember, the first thing that we can always remember is that when the Lord shows us something, that we are to take action. In verse 18, it says Abigail made haste. She didn't sit around and let the grass grow underneath her feet, but she took action. And then after she bowed to the ground, it says, so she fell on at his feet. And this is what she said. She said, O me, my Lord, on me let this iniquity be. She was willing to take the hit for not only Nabal, but the people, right? Remember, there was a time when David did Saul's work. I can't remember what village that was, but he went into that village and that city to do Saul's work because Saul wasn't willing to do it. And he did that, and we said he went into that city because he loved the people. Right? That's why she did this. Even though Nabal was a rotten, dirty scumbag, from what we can tell, she still was honoring him. She was still trying to save him, in a sense. And the other people, right? And plus she knew if she confessed and had the iniquity brought upon, the punishment for that brought upon her, that David would probably not avenge quite the same. It would be different. It'd be different. Then she says, "And please let your maid servant speak in your ears and hear the words of your maid servant." Hear him. So when she approached him, she didn't forcibly command him to listen to her. "Hey, hear this. You know, I got something to say to you, Mr. King, to be." But she asked permission. She asked permission to speak. Right? Went on and said, "Please let," 25, "please let not my Lord regard the scoundrel Nabal. For as his name is, so is he." Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. Kind of reads, Nabal is his name and folly is his game. In a sense, right? We might say. Again, is that the respectful thing to say about your husband? You know? No comment by my wife, right? just teasing. But here he is, right? But your maidservant did not see the young men of my Lord whom you sent. Now therefore, my Lord, as the Lord lives and as my soul lives, since the Lord has held you back from coming to bloodshed and from the avenging yourself with your own hands. When she came to David here, she was suggesting here a positive outcome. You know, she was trying to get him to not do the avenge with his own hands. He was trying to remember, hey, maybe you ought to, she didn't say it yet, you know, but maybe, you know, she mentions the Lord. Since the Lord has held you back from coming to bloodshed, since he's held you back, because here I am, right? And from avenging yourself with your own hands. Now then, let your enemies and those who seek harm for your Lord be as Nabal. She kind of suggests something there as well. It seems like she's saying, well, you know, let your enemies and those who seek harm for my Lord be as Nabal, meaning let the Lord take care of them, kind of thing, you know. The Lord will take care of them. So, and now with this present which your maidservant has brought to my Lord, let it be given to the young men who follow my Lord. Well, it's interesting here because she could have said, well, here, David, I promise that you won't harm us and I'll give you this. It could have been almost like a bribe, but it wasn't, was it? She was satisfying the desire that David had all along, and that was that the men that protected the sheep that worked there for Nabal, that they would be rewarded for that. So she brings this out and she requests, hey, let this be the fulfillment of that. Please forgive the transgressions of your maidservant. So she asked for forgiveness there, outright. For the Lord will certainly make for my Lord an enduring house. An enduring house. I think this is an encouragement here because it's almost like she's trying to get David onto the big picture. You know? The big picture is that the Lord will certainly make my Lord David an enduring house. He will make it enduring. Even though Nabal is throwing a wrench in it right now, the Lord's still going to be doing a work for you, David. Still going to make your house enduring. Because my Lord fights the battles of the Lord, and evil is not found in you throughout your days. So she knew his anger, knew he was angry at Nabal and his servants there, but she was trying to bring him back to the Lord, right? Because my Lord fights the battles of the Lord. She's reminded him why he's on the battlefield, right? Are you fighting the battle for the Lord, or are you fighting it for David now? Is Nabal God's fight, or is he your fight? So she's trying to persuade him, remember, fight the battles of the Lord. And evil is not found in you throughout your days. Yet a man has risen to pursue you and seek your life, but the life of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of... This is an interesting place here. It says, or phrase, yet a man has risen to pursue you and seek your life, but the life of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of the living with the Lord, your God. And the living of your enemies he shall sling out as from the pocket of a sling. Again, I think Abigail's trying to get him to remember some things here. Where did David use the sling? And he put the rock in the sling, but who really killed the giant? God did. Right? He's saying, look it, you're going to be with the living, but your enemies, God will sling out. He's the one that's going to take Nabal out, not you. And it shall come to pass when the Lord has done for my Lord according to all the goods that he has spoken concerning you and has appointed you ruler over Israel, that this will be no grief to you, nor offense of heart to my Lord. Saying, look it, I don't want you to have any regrets. Right? It's not going to be any grief to you. Right? So what you do, right, when you're the ruler of, you know, you're going to be the ruler here of Israel, you're going to regret that you snuffed out this guy. Right? And there's probably a lot of reasons why that would be the case, right? Because people would say, look at him perhaps and say, gee, can I even trust this guy? If I don't give him something, is he going to come back on me and say, I'm going to wipe you out, you and your family, if you don't pay up, you know? So no regrets. Either that you have shed blood without cause, or that my Lord has avenged himself. But when the Lord has dealt well with my Lord, then remember your maidservant. I'm not sure about that statement being really good from a sake of Abigail, because it kind of presents a sense that she's kind of considering the future here with David. You know, he'll remember me. You know, remember when this is all over. And I don't know if she's thinking maybe when the Lord is taking care of Nabal, remember me. You know, the one that come before you with all these gifts and convince you to look towards the Lord and so forth. Remember me. Verse 32, then David said to Abigail, blessed is the Lord God of Israel who sent you this day to meet me. And blessed is your advice, and blessed are you, because you have kept me this day from coming to bloodshed and from avenging myself with my own hand. For indeed, as the Lord God of Israel lives, who has kept me back from hurting you, unless you had hurried and come to meet me, surely by morning light no males would have been left to to Nabal. So David received her from her hand what she had brought him, and said to her, "Go up in peace to your house. See, I have heeded your voice and respected your person." So he obviously, David recognizes that Abraham was a blessing from the Lord, that he would bless the Lord for her and just praise him for that the Lord sent her to him. The other thing is that David listened. David listened to Abigail. It wasn't just, well, here's a woman chattering at me, you know, wanting to change my ways. And no, he really took to heart these things, you know, that she had said toward him. And so, you have kept me this day. He even gave her the accolades and sincerity here that she actually kept him from shedding blood. She was the stop in front of him. Right? She was the cork on the bottle in a sense. She didn't allow him to go out and really flush out these people that had were against him. She reminded him of God's plan, and that if he had done this, just think what it might have done to his reputation with the people. Right? That it would have been blown. David was a man after God's own heart. And he might have been not quite that when the people discovered that he went and killed this man over a lack of payment, right? The other thing is that Saul just needed one good reason to kill David. And this certainly would have done it, because what David was about to do was going to be criminal. And he was going to put himself in such a position that now David was the criminal. And people could see, oh, Saul is correct here. But he was blessed by her advice. And he was blessed in so much just to listen to a woman. I mean, in those days, he just got done listening to Samuel, right? The prophet, and the prophet had died, and now God sends him Abigail, in a sense, not necessarily a prophet, but just somebody with some understanding, some good understanding, it said. And he was listening to her. And David would receive from her hand, and it was almost as if he's saying, look, I'm going to do away with the debt there. I'm going to take away the debt that he's owed me. Verse 36, now Abigail went to Nabal, and there he was, holding a feast in his house like the feast of a king. And Nabal's heart was merry within him, for he was very drunk. Therefore he told him nothing, little or much, until morning light. So it was in the morning, when the wine had gone from Nabal. You know, there's no reason to talk to a drunk about Jesus. Right? I mean, a lot of times you talk to the drunk on the street about Jesus, you think he remembers anything? I suppose if it's a supernatural thing and the Lord really told you to witness to that person, either it's going to be good practice for you, or maybe God's going to just allow him to remember something. But for the most part, drunkenness isn't a great place to witness to anyone. Therefore, she told him nothing, little or much, until morning light, when he was kind of sober, I guess. So it was in the morning, when the wine had gone from Nabal, and his wife had told him these things, that his heart died within him, and he became like a stone. Then it happened, after about 10 days, that the Lord struck Nabal and he died. So here he is, Nabal. Now, he's holding a feast, and the feast was the celebration of, obviously, the shearing celebration. But David was in pursuit of him. Not a lot of wise guys have a feast and a party and a drunk and go to the place of drunkenness when somebody's pursuing them, right? Hence his name Nabal. Right? I told you I was going to say Nabal, didn't I? Nabal, which is fool. It says his heart died within him. The fact here is that you can think that you got away with something, or, you know, I'm just going to rip this guy off. But his heart died within him, it says. And the fact is that sometimes people think that you can get away with it. You almost become hardened to it. But God always has the final word. Right? He always has the final word. I mean, if you don't believe me, ask Stephen Hawkins today. Right? God's got the final word with him today. Right? Because once we die, it becomes there's judgment, you know. So but David, you know, was stopped by Abigail in a sense. Really, the Lord used Abigail to stop him. Put that cork in the bottle, right? And then he didn't pour out his vengeance upon Nabal, but you know what? God takes care of that. And that's exactly what she was saying. Like, don't you do this and regret it. God's got this. If there's judgment to occur, it's going to occur and God's going to have it. It's going to be, right? Verse 39, so when David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, "Blessed be the Lord who has pleaded the cause of my reproach from the hand of Nabal and has kept his servant from evil. For the Lord has returned the wickedness of Nabal on his own head." We don't have to do anything against the wicked. God will take care of them. And David sent and proposed to Abigail to take her as his wife. When the servants of David had come to Abigail at Carmel, they spoke to her, saying, "David sent us to you to ask you to become his wife." How romantic. Right? You get a letter in the mail, "Hey, will you marry me?" I don't know. That's kind of how I picture it, you know? You send your bunch of buddies to her. Say, it's almost like elementary school, you know? You send the letter across the aisle to say that you like that girl or whatever. I never did that, but I never received them either. Then she arose, bowed her face to the ground and said, "Here is your maid servant, a servant to wash the feet of your servant, of the servants of my Lord." So Abigail arose in haste and rode on the donkey, attended by five of her maidens. And she followed the messenger of David and became his wife. And David also took Ahinoam of Jezreel, and so both of them were his wives, which is kind of not that funny, really. It's kind of, you know, it's where David fell short, you know, and it's where any time that you see multiple wives in the Bible, it's not good. It's just not good. Nothing good comes of it. There's not one place in the Bible where a man has two wives in it or more, and it's come to be good. Now, it might have been not stated quite yet to David that he shouldn't be doing this, but I just believe that the conscience of God tells us that that's wrong, especially when you go back to Genesis, right? And you read Genesis, and it says bone of one bone, flesh of one flesh, right? Bone of one bone. So, but Saul had given Michal, his daughter, David's wife, to Paltai, the son of Laish, who was from Galim. The one thing I see when you look at Abigail is that whether she was Nabal's wife or whether she was David's wife. She was still humble. You know, it didn't change that about her. So she was this guy with all the sheep and goats wife, or she was the to-be king's wife. It didn't matter to her. Her character was humble, right? Because it came, she said in verse 41 that she arose, bowed her face to the earth. David wasn't there, right? So she wasn't bowed before him, but just bowed before the Lord, right? And what was her reply there? It says, "Here is your maidservant, a servant to wash the feet of the servants of my Lord," speaking of David, "and to wash the feet," right? To become a servant. I am to be the servant. And she was then, she was that before. So it's a good illustration of just to be a servant there. And of course, David, you know, David realizing that he doesn't have to take action on vengeance. Abigail took action against vengeance when she confronted David. And the way she confronted David was very submissive, very respectful, right? She didn't go browbeat him because he was being a dummy, you know? But she went to him sincerely. She wanted to stop this. It was all about vengeance, right? It was about David fulfilling the vengeance that he felt he needed to. When in reality is that when somebody is against us, we just need to go to the Lord with that person, right? We don't need to take matters into our own hands. God will handle it. God will work out it a lot better than what we ever intended to.